Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Nice drive in it was. Nice and open roads on the public holiday Monday. Don't worry about the pandemic. Public holiday will clear them out. Don't you worry about that, Adam White. Good morning to you.
Yes, very much so. Very few people on the roads. Not that there's a lot of people on the roads when we come into work, but there was... It was quite noticeable, actually.
It was, wasn't it?
Just how few were on the roads.
That's the first thing I thought of.
Yes.
First thing I thought of.
I probably got in 30 seconds earlier than I would normally, but there was still no one on the roads.
Yes, yes. How was your weekend?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. It was a bit of a different one, obviously, with less football on, and you still couldn't visit anybody, and there was still no junior sports. So it felt a bit like last year at times, where you sort of had to make fun with your family and entertain each other to get through. And then,
did you do that?
Yeah, absolutely we did. And then when we got to watch some sport, we certainly saw some upsets. It often happens at this time of year through the bye. Some teams really relish the bye and come back fresh and sharp and different. We certainly saw that with Hawthorn on Friday night. And then some teams kind of struggle coming off the bye, that they can't get their motors going, which probably was the case with the Giants yesterday. And we saw the great game last night. Richmond, my best bet of the weekend, Daniel. 22 points up in the last quarter, and they lost.
I did think of you. I did think of you last night, I must admit.
Got a bit emotional there, but anyway.
Well, you and I tipped Richmond. The other three on the panel on Friday and Thursday.
Is that right?
Rama, Boomer and Jono tipped the West Coast Eagles.
Worse.
That makes it even worse. But... Adam Romanaskis did certainly tip the West Coast Eagles. Like, he was the winner of the face-off again on Friday. So Norm Patterson from Frankston was the winner. Tom Mitchell got the most Kentuckys on Friday night against the Swans. He extends his lead but to a significant margin. We're almost about to get the friends at Tab to just do the payout. Early payout for
Still Rama, not over yet.
Who's going very, very
still
well.
Still catching.
Very, very well. Rama, good morning.
Look, the reality is I'm just reading the game better at the moment. It's simple. Like my friend to the left of me, he can watch how many games of football he likes. The reality is he's having a mare. He's having a mare. So, my tip of the week.
My friend to the left.
Tip of the week's Richmond.
Well, are you allowed to?
I questioned that on air. I said, you sure?
I don't think
$1.65.
No, I don't think you did.
I think I did.
They were certain he's Richmond. And
well, they lost.
Won.
They lost.
They did.
So, at the end of the day, the scoreboard says they lost. So
You're a smug little... fella, you are.
You're really smug. I know fella. It upsets him.
No, it does.
Well, it really upsets him.
It does. Absolutely does. I'm very annoyed about Richmond last night.
Two really.
I'm seeing their back going there. This is going to script. West Coast aren't that good. Richmond, you know.
Two good games of footy. I think from different perspectives, the Richmond West Coast game obviously was a cut above in terms of the quality, the way the ball was able to move. The GWS North Melbourne game was... I was really, really happy for North Melbourne. They looked like they changed their game. They started to attack the centre corridor a lot more. Then GWS, they were going nowhere in that third quarter. They were going uphill in mud. They couldn't do anything. And then all of a sudden in the last quarter, they come out and 6-1 and nearly snatched the game on Daniel Lloyd. Yeah.
Should have.
Yeah.
And then Saturday night, you have a situation where St Kilda destroys its own season, keeping a side goalless for a quarter and a half to start the match, and then only kicking a goal at the start of the third quarter, not kicking another one, and forgetting how to score.
That was as bizarre
as it comes.
That last quarter for St Kilda and Adelaide, it looked like Adelaide had more players on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely did.
They just could not move the ball out of their back half. So... I know Adelaide were applying enormous pressure, but you're still going to be able to move the ball from one end of the ground to the other. Mm. And it was slippery in the end and all that sort of stuff. I get that, but that was a real lost opportunity for the Saints.
See, I'll ask you this question, Daniel, and we'll obviously talk more about it with Jimmy later on, but when you're coaching a team that clearly is trying to save the game as opposed to try and win the game because they have such a lead, as St Kilda did, they felt like... They just lost all momentum. How do you get it back in that situation?
Well, you've got to play the game. You've got to play the moment. I don't think the Saints played the moment very well. Like, just refused to... They went into real preservation mode and didn't run at all. Couldn't get any flow in their game at all. And whether or not they wanted to, I don't know. But they certainly, midway through the third quarter, they ran out of gas. You could see them almost physically stopping. And I was doing that game, and I tipped the Crows at 3 o'clock time. This is, they'll get home here. Now, I didn't expect it to be as dramatic as it was, perhaps in the last quarter. But they were all over them, as you said, Ram. Looked like they had 4 or 5 players extra on the field. So you've got to keep playing the game. You just have to, because as soon as you stop and you start putting players behind you, say, let's just slow the tempo down, it says to your players that they think you're nervous.
Yeah.
They think you're nervous and you're not quite sure if you can hold on here. But if you give them the impetus and the confidence that, no, we're okay here, we'll be able to keep the flow going and keep scoring and get the game back on our terms, they will grow from that because they believe that you believe. And if that's a very powerful thing, I reckon.
It's very rare now that teams are good enough to save a game. It's rare.
And is that because we often hear about that, the comment about playing it in your half? And we saw that obviously on Saturday night with Adelaide keeping it in their half. But even last night in the West Coast game, Richmond couldn't get it out of West Coast half. There was that moment or a couple of moments where it went back to the middle and Richmond got a goal from a centre bounce and, you know, they got a couple of goals. But in general terms, it was parked in West Coast half of the ground in that last quarter. And you don't usually see that with Richmond, that they get stuck, but they did.
I need to talk about David McKay.
You sure?
Do you want to do it now? You want to wait for Jimmy? Yeah, or we'll just have two goes at it? Because I know that you've been waiting for this moment for over 24 hours.
It's a big moment. You're upset. You're angry. You're disappointed. You're concerned.
I've been a very good supporter of the judicial system.
You have.
I think the checkmate list has been handled well this year. Grand scheme of things. How we get a situation where David McKay has been sent to the tribunal with no charge is unacceptable. Yes. What does David McKay go to the tribunal on Tuesday night and say? I'll tell you what I'd be doing if I was Adelaide. I got their transmission yesterday, communication from headquarters. I would have replied to the email, sorry, can't make it, won't be there, have nothing to defend. This is an unacceptable outcome as far as I'm concerned. How do you get a situation where a player has to front the tribunal for no reason? Yeah. That's effectively what's happened here.
Just go to the tribunal.
Just go to the tribunal and we'll talk about it. No, you charge me and I'll defend myself if there is a situation where I need to. But according to your judicial system to this point, I've got nothing to defend. Mm. So what does he do? What does David McKay and Adelaide do on Tuesday night?
He sits there and listens.
Well, how do you possibly prepare to defend yourself to know what you're up against? You don't know what you're up against. It's a very unusual outcome. In fact, I think it's an unacceptable outcome. Just in my opinion, it's an unacceptable outcome. What we've seen through the course of the year so far with the MRO situation is you would get a grading and you'd go and defend it. We've talked about this a lot, Whitey. We like the system. Get the grading. If you think it's a reportable offence, give them a grading on the table of offences and then go and defend it. What we've got here is just, ta-da!
Well,
can't defend you. Can't charge you.
The charge is breaking somebody's jaw.
That's not a charge.
But that's why he's going to the tribunal.
Well, that's seemingly...
If he didn't break Hunter Clark's jaw, he's not going to the tribunal.
That's seemingly...
Is that
the
fair?
Reason he might be there, but we don't know.
No.
There is no actual evidence or charge against David McKay to get him to the tribunal on Tuesday night. It's an unacceptable outcome.
So Adelaide have to be making a phone call after the email went out yesterday.
I'll be telling them to jam it.
Yeah.
Not coming. What am I going for?
What can my client prepare to defend?
It makes no sense.
Yeah,
they would have been better off saying, you know what? It was careless. It was high. It was severe. You go and defend it.
Yeah.
All right. Whether or not you think it's right, fantastic. This is your right as a player to go to the tribunal and defend yourself, and that's okay. And we like that process because that's due process. Yep. But how do you defend this? What's he defending? I don't understand. David King had his say on it on Fox Footy yesterday. Let's have a listen to Kingy. A bit different on my take.
I have a different view on this totally, and I'm looking at the health and well-being of the players long-term. We've got so many players on the sidelines now with their lives being altered significantly at 21, 22 years of age. They've got 80 years of their lives to come. And for me, you can highlight the point of contact if you like. You can look at all the stills you like. It's not about still photos. This is about decision-making in the path here for McKay. Significant contact is highly likely in that evidence when he's coming in flat speed like that. I just think... we need to coach that out of players. We need to suspend that out of the game. And I'm comfortable with this being 3 or 4 weeks because the price these players are paying post-career is well and above someone missing 1 or 2 weeks of football. We've got to change behaviour. We've had this conversation 30 times in 2 years and nothing's changed.
either take a stand or forget about it, because they've been lost in their messaging all the way through. If the head of football doesn't know whether that's a reportable and suspendable offence, what are we doing? How are the players supposed to know?
David King on Fox 4 yesterday. He's been on 3 or 4 weeks. He and I had a vociferous disagreement yesterday in the text exchange.
What does he want coached out of a player there? Attack on the ball.
Seemingly, that's what he was suggesting.
Like, so that,
he's philosophically, the head contact and concussion and non-football acts that require players to miss games for concussion, I am fully with. I think most of us are with.
So it is believed the AFL was worried by the look of McKay running 15 metres and accelerating into the contest, showing a lack of care for Clark.
That's from Johnny Rolfe's piece in the...
So if that is in the dying moments, the ball is inside St Kilda's forward 50, okay, Dave McKay slows down into that contest and allows Hunter Clark to take the ball and kick a goal and win the game. Then it's the other way. Oh, David McKay should have attacked that contest harder. It's you can't coach that out of a player.
But I've stayed quiet.
You know, when he stays quiet, he's got something to say.
No, because I in a lot of ways I don't, because this is the problem that the game finds itself in at the moment, that I understand completely where Kingy's coming from about the head is sacrosanct and we've got to look after the player. I get all of that. But the way the game is played, sometimes accidents happen on the field.
That's right.
Yeah. And I think in the situation that David McKay was in on Saturday night was that he definitely accelerated to the contest, but
he had to get there.
He had to get there. And he protected himself in the process, and I think he actually handled that situation extremely well. The reality is, as a result of his action, a player is badly injured. But accidents happen on the football field. They always have and they always will. So I don't know really in the circumstances we're in whether that's avoidable. And just because someone gets injured, that doesn't mean necessarily that there needs to be accountability for that. And I feel like we've got to that in the game, that there needs to be, every time someone is injured, someone needs to be made accountable for it so it doesn't happen again. Well, if that's the way it's going to be, go and play tennis or go and play lawn bowls, because there are going to be those sorts of incidents.
There's collisions in this sport.
And if we start to suspend players for what David McKay did, there's every chance we'll actually get more injuries, because players will sort of go into self-preservation mode and be clumsy or be hesitant and not act in a natural way, which could potentially cause other injuries. So there's always going to be consequences for any, you know, for any changes in taking the instinctiveness out of the game. That would be my feeling. And I think in the situation with this MRO one, to me, and I don't know, I haven't spoken to Chris O, but for to be put up with no finding to it, I feel that Chris O thought, you know what, David McKay shouldn't be suspended for that, but because there's been someone with a badly broken jaw, there doesn't necessarily need to be accountability, but there needs to be an explanation for what happened.
Well, go and charge him.
The tribunal.
Yeah.
But some things, I don't think that if Chris O thought he should have been charged, he would have been charged.
But he wasn't. So the incident is ungraded, according to the MRO release yesterday evening. The incident is ungraded, so he hasn't been charged, but it's been referred to the tribunal.
It's unfair on the tribunal.
Of course it is, but there has to be... So I'm imagining that he has to go to the tribunal and justify why he shouldn't be suspended.
But
how
stupid is that?
So if that's the case,
say
then
that
he
out
needs
again.
To be charged.
You have to go and defend.
Because well, I would imagine
why you
that,
shouldn't be, even though you haven't been charged.
But I would imagine that the having gone to the tribunal for a long, long time, many, many years, is that the AFL council, or whatever you call it, he will come in and say he should be suspended for this.
For what?
He's going to have to breaking Hunter Clark's jaw.
But that's not a suspendable offence outcome. There is a process. There is a table of offences. There's a whole table.
No, I understand all of that. I understand all that. But it's almost like they're going to sit down there on Tuesday night and say, right, Hunter Clark's jaw has been broken.
And that's very unfortunate.
Should David McKay be responsible for that? Let's have a chat about it. That's how it feels
like. It feels like a conversation starter.
It's not. Yeah. But a tribunal setting is not that
I understand
setting.
That, but I can't think of any other way it will be handled but that.
It's an unacceptable outcome as far as I'm concerned. Because if it gets to the point, like to Kingy's suggestion and what you picked up before, Ram, about attacking the footy. He's entitled to attack that footy. And
of course he is.
That was as legitimate a 50-50 contest as you'll ever see.
Yeah.
And the speed of opposing players is irrelevant in that.
Yep.
You're entitled to get to win that footy, depend going turtle pace or going Usain Bolt pace.
Yep.
That's the game. It gets to the point, if David McKay is suspended, we get to the point where it becomes dangerous to have a ground ball in the game. Mm. So, you know those games you used to play at training where it was keep possession, the ball touches the ground, turnover?
Yep.
That will end up happening because you won't be able to engage in a ground ball because you might get hurt. And someone might get concussed or a nose broken or a jaw broken or whatever. That's the outcome we're actually leading to if we get David McKay suspended from here. Ground balls will almost be taken out of the game. They have to be. Because you put yourself in a situation where you contest it legally and somebody gets injured as a result of an accident, which happens in a collision sport, it doesn't make any sense to me.
And you can't kick it off the ground.
Can't kick it off the ground.
So,
well, that's in junior foot. You can in the adults.
No, but if someone's got their hands on it, you can't.
Well, that's true. That's true. It's a most unusual outcome. I was very, very surprised. I would have preferred him to have been charged.
But then you look at the other two incidents. I think Taylor Walker, he got a fine. For elbowing,
who was that player?
And then Ben King,
Callum Wilkie
from Gold Coast. He just elbowed Luke Ryan straight in the back of the head.
Taylor Walker,
he got fine.
Callum Wilkie with every intention of whacking him in the head.
Go and look at Ben King's.
I haven't seen Ben King's. Why haven't I seen that?
Just bang! Didn't even try to contest the mark, and he got a fine.
Taking whack blokes in the head with your elbows and forearms. And get a fine.
On purpose.
On purpose. And yet you contest a ball in a legitimate 50-50. And
arms straight.
Very, very unfortunate accident to
outcome versus action. It's what it's become. Well, it's been that way for a while, but it's getting worse.
It's going to be ground ball turnover, surely, the way it's going. Yeah. It's not very cool. It's not very cool.
Are you and Kingy okay, though?
Yeah, we're good.
Are you sure?
We're allowed to have...
Did you get heated?
Different opinions.
Got heated? Some text messages
It was assertive at times.
Robust.
Robust. Good word. Yeah.
Did you actually have a conversation or was it just text?
A text exchange.
Did you use capital letters?
I was busy catching my under 14s yesterday afternoon as we're allowed to get back out there.
Would they play? You had to play or had training?
No, just training.
Yeah.
No, just a session for the boys. They had a good time, which was nice. Nice to be back out there.
Use capital letters in any of the...
No capitals.
Yeah.
No capitals. Just conversation.
I did with our mate last week.
What's that? Yeah, you used
to. We had a conversation over text and I ended it with some capital letters.
I had a very passionate Richmond mate, as you know, and again last night, I couldn't engage with him because he was too emotional. So the best way to do it is not to engage. It's very emotional. Umpiring decisions.
Football is an emotional game.
Yes.
Brings out the best in us and the worst.
Mm. I just can't wait for my... I've got a stat again. Another stat. I'm going to wait for Jimmy.
Don't go hard.
Is it already... Is it like last weekend's stat or Friday stat where he was already on Twitter the night before?
No. Kept this one. I've taken your advice and I've kept
well
it.
Well done.
1-300-652-927 with your take on the David McKay situation or how you deal with emotional friends via text. Do you use capitals? Or 0416905052.
Well, you don't engage because it becomes an irrational conversation.
Quite often. Now, Whitey, what happened? We're going to catch up with Roland, with Craig Gabriel covering the Roland Garros French Open very shortly, in fact, after the break, which was, there's been some great drama there as well. But tell me, what's happened in the second test between New Zealand and England?
Well, it was a win to New Zealand by 8 wickets in the end, so a two-match series goes New Zealand's way 1-0, and they've just proven again why they should be playing in this World Test Championship final, because they're a very good team, and they won quite convincingly, really, and it was all due to England being skittled for 122 in their second innings, which has caused a lot of problems for English cricket at the moment, because a lot of former greats have really got on the attack with the way that England are batting. And I mentioned it after the first test match that we're kind of using this as a bit of a reference to the fact that the Ashes is later in the year and England's top five are just not good enough. So while Stokes will come in, he will bat at 6, Butler will probably come in and bat at 7. That clearly strengthens their batting, but it doesn't fix the problem they've got in their top five. So, bit of an issue for England. For New Zealand now, great confidence going into the test match against India. down at the Rose Bowl, and they'll bring back about four players.
New Zealand?
Yeah, Williamson didn't play. Southie didn't play. So they had quite a few players that they can now bring back into the team. BJ Watling didn't play. So, it was quite decisive. I certainly didn't see that coming so comprehensively, considering the first test was fairly even, albeit ruined by rain. So, yeah, that was the cricket.
So that's upsetting for the Pom fans out there. But interesting for the Australians out there.
Yeah.
Are you ready for the Ashes?
Yeah, definitely.
Camp?
There could be some pretty quick test matches. I talked last week about the Scandinavia Mixed event that was held last night. It looked like it was going to be finally a win to Jason Scrivener. And
so for those that weren't with us last week.
Men and women played together. So one leaderboard.
On the European Tour.
Yep. They played groups together. So it was really quite an interesting event. As I said before, it looked like Jason Scrivener was going to win. And then he had consecutive double bogeys on the back nine.
Jason.
Which was a bit of a setback. So he ended up finishing in a tie for seventh. Scott Henn was the best of the Aussies, tie for fourth. Jonathan Caldwell won. He shot 800 in the final round to sort of post a number that they couldn't chase. And Alice Hewson was the first of the females, or the women, finishing in third. So good event. Good event. And you talked about the fact that England had nothing to smile about in the cricket. At least they won their first match in the Euros. They defeated Croatia 1-0. Raheem Sterling scoring in the 58th minute. But a lot of talk over the weekend was what happened to Christian Eriksen.
Yes, who collapsed.
That was unbelievable.
Denmark v Finland on Saturday night. He collapsed.
Yeah, thank God there's some good news coming out of it. So he went into cardiac arrest.
Yeah. Thank God for Simon Kjaer. He put him in the
cleared his airways
brace position and got him clear and got him safe and started performing CPR before the docs got there.
Yeah.
Like he went into cardiac arrest.
That was unbelievable how his teammates then surrounded him and, like, obviously to so people couldn't see.
How was that, the way that was all orchestrated? Oh, the leadership required by the captain to not only perform CPR but organise his players to create a
barrier sort of
thing. And then Christian's wife or girlfriend came onto the pitch, and they had to look after her. But
watching the players when they were surrounded, they were all just bawling their eyes out.
It was like
horrible.
A drill the way that they set that all up. That they were just kind of knew what to do, even though, as you said, Rama, they were so emotional.
It was just clearly never seen anything like that. But it was, and thank God, there's some good news out of it. He looks like he's recovering okay in hospital. Yeah. So, but that was scary. And seeing the replay, the ball got kicked to him and he just stumbled forward and collapsed.
It was almost like he went to head it.
Yeah.
And
just collapsed.
And he was part of the play before then as well. And and I know that this doesn't matter in these circumstances about how good you are as a player, but Christian Eriksen is one of Denmark's best players of the last 25 years. Mm. That's how good he is.
He is. But so, it was dramatic.
Yeah.
The amazing part was that they went back out to play.
90 minutes later,
they went back out
to play. Which is remarkable in itself that the Denmark players were able to do that, considering how emotional they
had been. Yeah.
So,
that's right. It was quite a dramatic weekend in the world of football. For the Euro 2021, it's a great competition.
England got up last night.
Who did they beat? Croatia, wasn't
it? Croatia, which is a good win. 1-0.
What are you laughing at? You just said that?
I said it a couple minutes ago.
I know you said it, but I'm just want to repeat it. It's okay.
In fairness, it's not the first time something has been repeated around these parts in the last couple of months. We just sort of move on and come back to it and just talk about it. Tony's on the road. Wants to get involved in the conversation this morning. Good morning, Tone.
Yeah, g'day, fellas. I've got a couple of points. I'm a Saints supporter. Pretty disappointed, pretty frustrated, all that sort of stuff. But a couple of things I want. Yeah, you spent 20 minutes going on about the bump, the collision. Bottom line is, he bumped him, hit him in the head.
He didn't bump him.
Life for me.
Didn't bump him, Tone.
The problem is now, with all this slow motion stuff, it gets him right in the head. With his
got him. No, there's no disputing that. Cannot dispute that. Absolutely. There is impact to the head. But he didn't bump him. You can't tell me that's a bump.
Well, I looked at it a few times and it looked like I got him smack in the head. It looked like a bump to me. But anyhow, I've got another question. I want to change the subject about St Kilda with a goal kicking.
Yep.
About 4 or 5 weeks ago, when Jared Roughead was on 360 and they asked him about Maxie King's goal kicking, He said, no, Maxwell sorted out himself. He doesn't need any help. Then a week or so later, with problems with his goal kicking, he rings up Matty Lloyd, and obviously what we know what's happened there. So therefore, Jared Ruffhead reckons there's no problem that he can fix with his goal kicking. Then all the commentary after that is, they'll sort it in-house. Jared Ruffhead will work it out. So what the hell does Ruffhead do down there? I watched training a few times down there, and when I've seen him do a bit of goal kicking, all he does is stand between the posts, back things at 10.5 forward, kick it back out, doing a few different angles and bang it in again. I don't think he does anything.
Right, well, you're a better place than us. I haven't seen the train recent times, so I'll back your word in there.
It's up to Max King how forensic he wants to be with his goal kicking.
I reckon that's absolutely incorrect.
What's that?
That it's up to Max King.
Why? It's his career.
I wouldn't have thought Max King's the biggest issue at the moment at the Saints, just by the way.
No, but...
Well, it's his career, Whitey.
Of course it is. Of course it's up to Max King, but it's also up to the St Kilda Football Club to get that right.
Yeah, they're going to give him enormous encouragement and the necessary tools, but he's got to go and do it himself. He's got to go and seek whatever advice, whatever people he needs.
Shouldn't St Kilda be
coaching him,
doing that? Like,
well, I'm sure they are, but he's got to do it himself. Mate.
No, I know he's got to do it himself, but this is a St Kilda problem. It's not a Max King problem.
Yeah. Also, does he want to change his technique or not? That's the question. If he believes his technique is fine, he doesn't change it.
Well, I mean, because we once again saw last night, we were talking about this just last week about West Coast and their ability to convert their opportunities. They did it again last night. Now, if they don't have players that put in a lot of time and have good techniques, they don't win that game. No. It's as simple as that. It's like a golfer. You can hit the ball as far as you like, but if you can't putt, you're not going to win big events. You're just not going to. And this is the problem. Like, even again last night with Max King, couple of times where he got the ball inside 45, you could see the look over his face. Oh, geez. Now I've got to have a shot for goal. So what my point about that, Rammer, is it's not, of course it's Max King's responsibility to fix it, but it's actually St Kilda's responsibility to fix it because it is actually potentially costing St Kilda games of football. So it becomes St Kilda's issue. So if he's not, and we don't know because we don't see them train because everyone trains behind closed doors, but they should be doing so much more goal kicking because that's what's potentially costing them games.
You look at Oscar Allen and Josh Kennedy last night in the last.
But that's
quarter.
My point.
Beautiful.
Like,
well, Oscar Allen from outside 50.
But they do collectively more goal kicking. Yeah. They do. They treat it a lot more seriously.
It's on the
than
record
other clubs.
That those three, Allen, Kennedy, and Darling, went to the high performance staff and said, "We need to kick more goals. We need within our training." So we're going to sacrifice a drill or two. The others can do that, but we're going to kick goals.
So Damien Hardwick talked about it last night in his post-match press conference, that West Coast kicked 13 goals last night, 12 of them from set shots. So they finished with 13 goals, 7. Now, admittedly, Richmond had 12 goals, 9. But in the last quarter, where the game was at its highest pressure mentally, they kicked their goals.
Yeah.
I think it's something St Kilda should be investigating.
Yeah.
I'm with you. And Max, just come along for the ride. We'll just fix you. Come along. We'll fix you.
That's right. I don't think it's like, go and fix yourself, Max. That's your problem, mate.
They're paying him big bucks to be a goal kicker. It's on them to get him to be a goal kicker. And I focused on Max. And this is bigger than Max's goal kicking. This is everyone's goal kicking. This is everyone. Don't worry about Max. Worry about Jack.
Jack Higgins had a shot as well, and you could. He was never going to kick it.
No.
And what's his name?
Not sure.
I always call him Ryan Loney, and he's not Ryan Loney. Jack Loney.
Just go with Jack at Sakura.
Yeah, that's right.
If in doubt.
That check side that he tried to kick, like, this guy's getting paid really good money to be a specialist forward, and that's how he chooses to kick for goal.
Craig Gabriel has joined us on the line from Roland Garros after a very dramatic weekend in tennis for the French Open. Craig, welcome.
Bonjour.
Oh, bonjour to you too. We've had fairly dramatic events in the last couple of days there at Roland Garros. None more so than last night when Novak Djokovic was taking on Stefano Tsitsipas in the men's final. And your mate, the Greek freak, looked like it was home and hose. 2-0 down, but the robot, Novak, said, "Not on my watch, fella. I'm taking it from here."
Look, it wasn't a great match. It was a good match, and it certainly provided plenty of attention on it. There were moments that you didn't know where it was going, and certainly after the first two sets, as an example, you're just saying, you really thought that Tsitsipas could go through with this. But Novak, he's done it now, I think, three times at the tournament. After losing a couple of sets, he's gone off and changed shirts and clothes and underwear and whatnot, and has come back like a renewed person. And that's what happened again today. I mean, he did it against Musetti a couple of rounds ago, etc. Sorry. He turned this match around, and Tsitsipas said he didn't understand why his own game sort of fell away, and he wasn't quite getting the oomph on his shots as he was in the first couple of sets. But full marks to Novak, because the history that he's created with this result, over 4 hours and 11 minutes in the five-setter, it means he's now won a second French Open, which makes him the first and only man in the Open era to have won each of the four majors multiple times.
Yeah, I think he joins.
It's an amazing achievement.
Going back to not the Open era, but Emerson and Laver, the other two, is that right?
Yep. Emerson and Laver, for the entire history of tennis, not just the Open era, it's now only three of them. Roy, Rocket, and now Novak that have achieved something like that, which is phenomenal.
Now, Craig, we keep talking about this, about Djokovic, Federer, and Nadal, and who's the best. And I know you don't like engaging in this sort of conversation because they're all such great players. But as it stands now, he's only one behind Nadal and Federer. He's got winning records against Nadal and Federer. And to win his second French Open, he had to beat Nadal, albeit in a semi-final. There was doubts about him that maybe he just lost the plot, probably more mentally than anything else a few years ago. He seems to now be back where he was.
He certainly did seem to lose the plot when he lost to Checanato over here at the French Open a few years ago, and he went off hiking in the mountains, and he was really, off with the pixies. But certainly he's turned things around, and, he said that the likes of Federer and Nadal's records keep on inspiring him and push him to chase them. But he, at the same time, is creating his own path and his own journey. He says, just like they would be doing their own, I'm doing it my way. Now he wants even, obviously, greater glory because he made it clear he is now gunning for the Grand Slam. He's got the first two legs of it, the Australian, the Melbourne-Paris double. And the last time that happened was in 2016, which was Djokovic again. And before that, it was Jim Courier in 1992. And he says, I'm going to be honest. I'll say it. I don't see why I shouldn't. I'm going for the Wimbledon title. He said, then we'll see what happens with the U.S. and also Tokyo, because if he wins the gold medal and closes out the other two, he'll do what Steffi Graf did, the Golden Slam.
Steffi's birthday today too, Craig. Just send her a text. You probably sent her a text already, but
I did. I sent it to Andre because I sent her something else, a little gift or whatever, and I sent it through to Andre.
Fair enough, too. Just on Tsitsipas, it wasn't his time, but is his time coming?
Yeah, his time is definitely coming. There's no doubt about it. And he said that. He was very, very dejected, very gutted. He could barely, and in fact, he didn't. He didn't even try to get a smile on his face during the presentation ceremony when he got this silver tray that they gave him as a runner-up. But he said afterwards that he absolutely believes in himself and believes in the way he's playing and his game and all that, to win this title and to win other ones at this level. He's convinced of that, and so too am I. And he says, I know I've got a lot of points. I don't know what this has done for my ranking. Well, it has moved him up to a career high number four. If he had won it, he would have been three. This is an experience, and it's not a failure. It's an experience, and so often a player loses the first few majors before winning one. Look at Andy Murray, look at Ivan Lendl, and then, they take off. And I think it'll be the same for Tsitsipas.
Always great to see you, Jimmy. Triple Premiership player, Norm Smith, medalist, Brownlow medalist. By God, he's handsome. Jim, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Daniel. I really enjoyed your gentleman's measured conversation on the way in here about David McKay.
I'm keen for your take on this because you have been a part of this process, James.
I have, and you have as well. You've been the one who it's been referred to.
Yes.
I've been part of when it was a panel to decide whether to send it to the tribunal. I just want to know what's being announced this week. Are we moving grand final time? Is there a new rule change? Have we got an expansion team in Tasmania? Because
what do you mean?
Well, it's almost PR 101. Yeah, what's going on over here?
Look at this hand.
Can someone look at something while we slide something else in? Because I'm with you, Huff. Okay, this is ridiculous. How the fact that your sole purpose and job is to grade incidents and you can't grade it. We'll just pack it up then. Well, pack it. Like, seriously.
Well, I'm with you.
Heck, you cannot send someone to the tribunal without a grading. So, I'm with you. What are we doing here? Are we just a pie warmer?
Well, they do get nice pies.
Even in the old days, before there was grading, you were going to the tribunal for striking or tripping
or whatever it was.
He's going to the tribunal for...
Yeah, he's not quite
for
sure.
For the sake of going.
He's not quite sure.
So
I'd be telling him to jam it. Until you charge me, I'm not going.
One of the greatest goal kickers of all time, Plugger, ran at about 70%.
He's good.
Kicking, accuracy?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Kicking and fishing is about 60 to 70%. Umpires make mistakes.
Yep.
They've made a mistake. You don't get them all right. So I'm just saying that, you know, this is the 3 and the 10 from Steve Hocking and his man, Michael Christian.
Yeah, well, I would say that they go better than 70%. I reckon that they're pretty good.
I'm just saying that there's mistakes, and it happens at all. That we make mistakes here. We call wrong players' names. We have, you know, get things wrong.
I did that once.
Yep.
Whitey, I've never done Friday. Whitey on Friday.
But
those Fridays at the moment.
Can I just highlight a few points? I'll get them all out there.
Get them out
there. And then you guys can address them.
Okay. One by one.
One by one.
I've written them down.
I have.
Impressive.
Research.
Nice writing.
Research.
Not just a suburb.
That's not a suburb. You like my writing?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah,
my mum hated it, school teacher.
No, I like it.
She didn't think I should have ever got my pen license.
I should not comment on writing. Yeah.
No, you should not. You are horrible.
Hey,
feelings.
Sorry, that was aggressive.
Under the principles of someone getting hurt because of your actions on the football field, well, then Lockie Henderson needs to be at the tribunal.
I'm so glad you mentioned that.
Hey, I didn't go through the points.
Sorry, I'm aggressive.
Write that down.
Write that down.
Okay. I've got decent handwriting.
That means someone was concussed in a football act. So that means Lockie Henderson, we'll see you up there. We don't know what we're charging you with, Lockie, but can you go along as well? Because we've got the pie warmer warmed up, and I want to put 24 on. At the moment, we can only eat 12. For people who want to make this their flag in the ground as far as concussion and get it out of the game, I completely understand and agree with it. You will not get a bigger supporter of looking after players' heads, concussion, the long-term health benefits, because I'm a player who's gone through a number of concussions. So you're not going to get a bigger supporter. But this is not the hill to die on for it. This is not the incident or the act to do it on, because you can't have the same people jumping up and down on it then 2 days later then critique a player or a team for not going hard enough. So you can now, for the rest of the season and years on, never critique a player about going hard enough.
Correct.
Because
he's trying to talk.
I'm agreeing.
Shut up, mate.
Because you...
Let him finish.
You're suspending a player on still frames. You actually have now isolated this incident what else could have you done? I defy anyone to go back 15 metres, run as hard as you can and make a decision. There can be accidents, and Whitey, I heard you on the way in, there can be accidents in the game of football. Now, at very worst, and we're going back to football and non-football half, you and
yes.
I are going to be the founding fathers of this. We're Burke and Wills. If it classified as a football act, well, then at very worst, he gets a fine. And then you can, if he comes back again for the same incident, then we're looking for suspensions. Now, the fact that they've handed it to the tribunal again, we've gone, and my last point before I'll open the floor to you gentlemen, is don't get caught up with comparing incidents. You'll become the most frustrated human being in the world if you watch football and you go, well, this guy punched this guy in the head and this guy got that, so he got 2 weeks. So McKay has to go because this guy got that. Just look at David McKay. Don't look for anything. Don't have a lens of, you know, oh, he concussed him. Don't have a lens of he was just playing football. Just look at it and grade it in real time, and then if you have to still frame to check where he made contact, that's the only time you do still frames. Now, floor is yours. I got that off my chest.
Adam, you wanted to agree. Rama, you were trying to agree with a lot of that.
Do you want to see my notes?
You hear coaches, you hear commentators say that team was harder for longer. It's a lot of time. They were harder for longer. You're taking out that aspect of the game. You won't ever be able to criticise a player. You're right, Jim, for he didn't go hard enough at the ball.
Yep.
Well, then my reason I didn't go hard, I thought I was going to hurt him.
I could have hurt him.
Yeah, I could have hurt him. I could go to the tribunal. I could miss 4 weeks. So I just thought, I'll let him get the ball.
It's the most unusual. Your Henderson and Todd Marshall line is very, very good in this, because there was an incident where a player was concussed in a contest, similar to what happened to David McKay and Hunter Clark. In other words, it wasn't concussed, just got a broken jaw, slightly different, but a head clash and trauma nonetheless. Mm. And there's been no conversation that Lockie Henderson's liable for that contact.
He didn't say it. Shouldn't have been a free kick against Lockie Henderson to start with.
Because sometimes there are collisions in a collision game. You're quite right, Jim.
But Daniel, this is the thing that I think gets lost in all of this, because there will be people thinking that David McKay bumped.
He didn't.
He didn't bump.
That's the fundamental difference.
And so this is the whole thing, is that this is why it is a collision, or it is an accident, because he was aggressively going to attack the ball.
Yes.
And as a result of that, someone got injured. But we can't have a situation where there's any commentary or people thinking, oh, but David McKay bumped, so he chose to bump, so there's head or eye contact, there needs to be a suspension. If that was the case,
yes,
he would be suspended.
And we would that is fair.
That's right. But in this situation, this isn't the case. He was aggressively attacking the ball and trying to go to a contest and protect himself as he went, because he did turn to protect himself. That is what you're meant to do.
You're not going to go in and just open yourself up to get smashed to smithereens.
But there are players that do that. There are players that do go in. Now, whether it's because of the sliding rule, where people poke their head out because they're not prepared to go in lower and all these sorts of things, I think there's an argument for that as well. But we do have situations now where players, like a turtle, they put their head out to either milk a free kick, or they don't attack the contest properly. Now, I feel I shouldn't be talking about this because you three have played the game, but it's common sense sort of stuff, this conversation.
It was a great game. It felt like a heavyweight battle. And for the boys to do what they did in the end, yeah, both teams, I think, looked pretty tired towards the end there. Our crowd really helped. 50,000, you know, it was a great response from our players in the last 10 minutes. We hung in there. Probably Richmond overall played a bit better than us for the four quarters, but when it mattered most, I thought we made the most of it.
That's the voice of Adam Simpson, the coach of the West Coast Eagles. They were victorious in round 13 over the Richmond. I'm sorry. Last night at Optus Stadium, 50,000 people. There's a fair bit of noise going on in that venue as well. It is a fantastic venue when there's a crowd. 85-81. They were 22 points down the last quarter, Jim. The Tigers went bang, bang, bang to start the last quarter. And normally, that's curtains for anyone. But the West Coast Eagles on that night, last night, said, not for mine. What'd they do? How'd they do it?
they stuck to their game plan, their game style. That was just two competing game styles. You could probably walk away with both sides. Like, Richmond, they were absolutely fantastic. They did a bit of West Coast to West Coast. They possessed the footy, especially across half-back. They took a lot of marks as well. Both sides had over 100 marks, and we talk about that a lot in here, that if you're able to mark the footy, you're able to win that territory game. I heard you, Whitey, earlier. You know, they were able to... What West Coast were able to do different in the last quarter was they were actually able to take those marks, taking the game forward. And I know we referenced that a bit, but it becomes a territory game. So you're able to set up really high with your defence. We saw Barras in the last quarter marking the ball up near centre wing instead of deep in his 50. So it was where the game was played in that last 15 minutes in particular. And the advantage West Coast has got, and Richmond, because Chile has been fantastic, is these two sides, if they get territory on you, they're pretty safe. They don't get scored against. But then if they do score, they've got good centre bounce ruckman. So then they win the territory quickly again when you're all set up. So for West Coast, that's why they play this possession game. And they just take territory off you. And they've got three tall forwards who can pluck everything. And Flying Ryan, who can jump the height of the point post. It's unbelievable. So then they can go there. Probably the difference is the competing styles. We know Richmond can play that chaos or dirty ball.
Yep.
Inside forward 50, where West Coast is a marking team inside forward 50. Yeah, so West Coast marked 15 balls inside forward 50, which is a lot against the Tiggies. But it was just a moment's thing. Like, you think Waterman's goal from 50, yep. Oscar Allen's goal from 50, and
Josh Kennedy.
The great Josh Kennedy. We need to celebrate this guy a little bit more. He's extraordinary.
Your point about the marks is interesting. I don't think there'd be too many games I've ever seen where both teams have had 110 marks.
No.
Plus, 112 to 113.
So was Richmond forced to play like that because of the way West Coast was playing, or did they come in with a bit of a different style to try and combat West Coast?
I think they took what was on offer to them.
Yeah.
So I don't think that was a deliberate ploy, and then they might come out and say, yeah, we wanted to possess it. But it just looked like West Coast, the way they folded back a little bit in defence early.
You mark the ball back with a centre. We're happy with that.
Yeah. You can knock them around.
Short and Hooley got a lot of the footy.
Yeah. You mark it back there. We're happy with that. Yeah. You just keep it there because that doesn't allow then your flow and your run. Yeah. So two players enormous for West Coast in the last quarter. Shannon Hearn, his intercept possessions, particularly in the back half, he stopped. I think he stopped three goals.
Yeah, the Castagna and the Martin kick-out goal were marked by Hearn in the square.
That Martin one, I know it was going offline, but if you actually look at his positioning when Martin was taking the shot, it was still proactive without being, reckless. It was he had his man covered, but as soon as Martin turned the other way, you're not getting the footy there, and just peeled off. Strong mark.
The beauty of Shannon Hearn is because he's so composed with the ball. Once he took those intercept marks, he didn't just then bomb the ball.
No,
he went and hit a target, and that then was able to get West Coast flowing. The other one who I love was Luke Edwards.
The young composure.
He's had 11 possessions in the last quarter. I didn't expect that from a kid so young, but he was enormous in the last quarter.
He was part of that last scoring chain as well.
But that kick he kicked inside to Oscar Allen, that is so hard, that kick. I think we all brushed over it because, you know, the height of the game and the emotion of it. But just outside 50, off a turnover with a lot of defence, he just had that composure. You could see him just go, oh, wait for it to unfold, and just a nice way to kick.
Because his weight was going to the boundary, and he was able to squeeze it sort of away. So what I wanted to ask you, from what Damien Hardwick said after the game, he talked about how his team didn't have composure with the ball and that rushing. Why did that happen? Because it's not something you often see from the Tigers, because it was two parts to it. It was the kick, trying to get it outside defensive 50. You know, Vlosten turned it over. There's a couple of others. But then also, late in the game, not so much the Martin one, but there was that other one where Castagna had players on its outside.
That's right. There's times they'll just hit up that target.
They would not normally panic like that. So is that just Richmond off, or is that did West Coast do anything
noise,
to them?
That's noise in the crowd. That's pressure from West Coast.
But Richmond usually can combat that.
I agree, but it happens to the best.
Yeah, they had a bit of an off night. They were actually off throughout the night. It wasn't just the moment. I think early they turned a couple over that we're not used to seeing, but it's kind of the bar that they've set. Yeah, you know, if that was another side, we probably wouldn't even think about it, but they've only lost by 4 points, and it was a 40-minute snap from Kennedy.
What were they up, 22, 23 points? They can usually shut the game down and turn it into almost boring.
Yep.
But to West Coast's credit, they continued to attack.
And what they did well is they took the ball. Once they got to the Toyota logos, that kick, even though it doesn't look sexy at the time, just off the line, inside the corridor, they showed a couple of times on the footage last night where Broad or Grimes, they're the middle gatekeeper in that defensive zone. That's a decision where you go, geez, I have to come up. So we saw a couple of times Josh Kennedy getting the ball when he was just outside forward 50. Because that kick was corridor, that spare defender has to come up, but he's caught in no man's land.
Yep.
And then then the next one was just a little bit off the line. I think Cripps got a couple of them on the 45. So you've got to be brave. You've got to be willing to turn a but if you turn a couple over, not go gun shy for the rest of the game.
You ready for my stat?
Just take your time with it.
We should have really nailed this.
Take your time.
Delivery is important here.
It is.
We want to understand it.
So the two grand final teams from last year, Geelong and Richmond, have played 7 matches against teams currently inside the top 8.
So they played all other 7.
Yep. So Geelong, its record is 4 wins and 3 losses.
4-3 Geelong. 4-3.
4-3. That's Geelong 4-3.
Hey, come on.
Richmond have played 7 games against the current top 8. And they are 1 win, 6 losses.
1-6, Richmond are 1-6.
Take that for data. Yeah.
So they currently sit 7-6 overall, but obviously 7-6 overall,
flat,
6 wins
flat track bullies.
Have been against the bottom 10. Right. No, I'm not saying that, but are we almost at a point where there is a pattern developing, or is it just that because of the injuries that they've had? Because clearly they've had an unhealthy list for most of the year. And in 2019, they were 7-6 and went on to win the premiership when they got their players back. So I'm not saying that they're gone, but is there enough of a sample to think, well, geez, you know what? You've actually got to be better against the top 8 teams, because their only win was against the Dogs, where they looked really vulnerable in that game in the first half.
So this is Richmond's back end of the season.
I've got, I know. No,
the back St end. Kilda, it's Gold awesome. Coast, yeah. Collingwood.
Win.
But yeah. not top eight sides. That's Whitey's point.
Then Brisbane and Geelong.
Yeah, Brisbane at home and Geelong.
Then Fremantle, North Melbourne.
Win.
North Melbourne. GWS, Richmond. So they've got two teams.
They play themselves.
Hawthorn.
Intra-club.
He said Richmond.
Oh, did I? Sorry. Yeah, and then they play Hawthorn last round. So they've got two teams in the 8 for their final 9.
So if we were to give them all of those games outside of Brisbane and Geelong, yep, and give them one of those two,
15,
that gives them top a 15-7. And I reckon that'll miss top 4.
I reckon that gets you 4th.
It might.
I'm still not concerned about the Tigers.
No, I like
the fact they're coming. West Coast at Optus Stadium. Elliot Yeo makes such a difference, such a difference to the West Coast, because they're getting their soldiers back. And we've talked about them through the year too, Whitey, that without Shuey and Yeo and those guys, Kelly have been out for a long time.
McGovern.
They're a different team. McGovern. Forgot about Big McGovern. So I'm less worried about Richmond than I am loving what West Coast are doing with their players back. I want to see them full strength. We all want to see the best teams with the best players. That's a given, I think. But I'm not worried about the Tigers.
So Richmond have Asprey, Prestia, Lynch and Nankervis to come back.
Yeah, so they've still got 17 or 18 premiership players out there playing last night. So, yes, they have injuries, but I don't think it was quite as bad as what it was earlier in the year and what it has been in previous years. I'm not giving up on Richmond by any stretch of the imagination. But those numbers could be considered concerning.
I think the better teams, are just starting to work out Richmond how to play.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is there a bit of because teams don't win 4 premierships in an era.
The Sydney game early was significant about that launch zone, and the Geelong game in the second half. Speed. Geelong just went at Richmond, went at them with speed, went at them with power. And teams have looked at it. You look at West Coast, last quarter, speed.
An unbelievable result for us to make it, especially with our percentage. So, and we're still, you know, the quality of players we've got that doesn't make it easy as well. So it might not be our turn, but we've got to make sure that our expectations moving forward are, you know, pushing to the highest levels. And whether they win this game or not, we've got to, you know, improve on that this effort tonight and last week and keep building on that.
That's the voice from Venus, of course, of Brett Ratton, the coach of St Kilda, and post-match. Well, it's a long way away, Raymond. Don't look at me like that. It sounded like he was a long, long way away. Down the line. Mercury, Venus. Uranus. I didn't want to say Uranus, because that would have been...
Pluto?
Could have been...
It's no longer a planet.
It's a dwarf planet.
That's correct. Yes.
Midget planet.
Yeah. You learn lots of things around here on the Breakfast Club. Great to have your company. Jimmy Bartel with us, Monday Footy Review. The Saints were disappointing. It's hard to say anything other than that. They kept Adelaide, as you said, Whitey, before, goalless for a quarter and a half. And they'd kicked 8-2, 3 minutes into the third term. And they didn't score another goal for the rest of the day, Jim. Fatigue, personnel-driven, system-driven. What's your take on what unfolded at Kazali Stadium on Saturday night?
Well, it has to be all of them, doesn't it? It depends what order you review it. And I feel for Brett Ratton, because we've said this with Brett Ratton and the Saints, is after they've been belted a number of times, I back you in, you do the video review, you do the mouthguard stuff, you do the rocket. It doesn't leave him many sort of tricks up his sleeve for the rest of the year, does it? Apart from, I've just got to see what personnel I've got and prepping for next year, don't you?
Well, the other bad thing for Saints fans is you can't even say, go and play the kids then, because there's none left. There's actually got no players left to play. There's a couple that haven't been played, but two or three. But
and they've recruited a lot of players for the now. Yeah. So,
so they've got a horrible injury
list. It's actually contradictory to what their list setup is.
Yeah. So I was watching that game and half. I know you and I spoke over the weekend about this. Is you're sort of, if you were half time, you're trying to put yourself in Matthew Nix's shoes. How am I going to address my boys? You know, down the sheds. Because Kazali's there. I'm just borrowing a bit of rugby league there. Down there. Down the sheds. You're going, we're nearly historically bad here for the first half. Because if we didn't kick a goal, it was the second time in 97 years.
Yep.
We've gone goalless, scoreless for the first half. We've been historically bad.
Who was the last team to do that?
Fitzroy.
Exactly right. Round one, 1995. Tough day.
Yeah, you would have been there.
Tough day.
You would have been there with your Doc Wielden badge on.
That was at the Witten Oval.
I kicked two against them 2 weeks later in my third game. Yeah,
we're talking about. Hey, we're getting sidetracked. But you're Matthew Nix, you're thinking, we've been so bad, but we're sort of slugging away our ball uses. We don't have to make up all the 5 or 6 goals in a row.
Yeah, eat an elephant one bite at a time, Jim.
That's it.
You can't eat the elephant in one gulp. Yeah. You might be 6 goals down, no point trying to eat it in the next 30 seconds. We've got an hour to go here. We'll sort it out over that journey.
Yeah, because they were winning some ball. I know St Kilda, we tidy up the contest. As Rama said, with a few other sides, we get a bit of overlap. We try and get the ball a bit deeper. Let's see what happens here. Yeah. But then the bad thing for St Kilda is those numbers in the last quarter were horrific.
I'll give them to you, Jim.
Plus 21 Adelaide were incontestable.
23.
Two more, Daniel Fangie.
23 contested possessions more. 12 more clearances. 12 clearances.
That's enormous.
16-4. And then 20-5 inside 50s. 15 more inside 50s. That's the last quarter alone.
The 12 clearance one stands out because you've got Brad Crouch and Jack Steele still in your midfield.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were doing.
Can I just highlight one thing before Whitey? You come off the long run? I've been to a number of Saints games, and their spread from the stoppage.
There it is.
I've said it nearly every time I've come away from a game. I have concerns about their spread from stoppage. And I don't know, I'm not going to say they're not fit enough or anything like that. It looks like it's almost paralysis by analysis. I have to be in this position and I have to play here. So nobody actually plays football once that, you know, set play or stoppage is done. So it's like we all get the setup, but then they stay in that setup. So the ball's moved, guys.
Yeah.
You've got to move. Yeah. You have a look at that goal. Unbelievable by the...
Phil Thorpe.
The last one.
Yep.
Over the head.
There's still players standing at the stoppage. Yeah. The ball has literally gone 20 metres up and gone 10 metres. How did no one touch that on the line?
Now, that was annoying watching it, I must admit. I'm
the
sure
game is on the line.
It actually bounced through.
Yeah.
And Phil Thorpe got to the line.
Yeah, he was
in the frame.
He could have kicked it again if he needed to.
And Dougal was just watching it go over his head.
But what about that decision against Howard earlier for Phil Thorpe?
Oh, no, that was
bad.
But it was like the one that comes off the shoulder of the bat, just drops over the slip cord. Everyone just watches it.
No one runs.
They'll try and catch it all over.
But the game's on the line. It wasn't just Dougs' fault. But I kept watching it, rewind, watch. There's guys just who are standing at the stoppage and going, there it goes.
They're just hoping the siren's going to go.
There it goes.
There it goes.
Oh, it's bounced through.
That's a setback.
Oh, no, we're going to cop some heat this week.
Let's talk about the Hawks.
The mighty fighting.
Happy team at home.
It was clear from the very start that it was going to be Hawthorn's night, Friday night against Sydney. In the end, it was a 38-point margin. Blew out in the end, 14-5 to 7-9. I must admit, if we're talking about disappointment, I was very disappointed the way the Swans went about it. But the different level of contest and physicality from the Hawks, which is what we spoke about on Friday, Rammer. Remember, I think about this Friday night.
Open hand point.
All five fingers. Because you asked me what I wanted to see.
Yep.
I wanted to see this contest and aggression. And that's what we got. And they got an outstanding result on the back of it.
Noticeable difference from Hawthorn on Friday night is I think they averaged, 60-odd contested marks in their back half of the ground. They had 30 on Friday night and they took the ball forward. They had 59 inside 50s.
GF.
Yeah, they started to play with more intent to attack, and it worked.
It was amazing, because 2 weeks ago, on the same ground against Gold Coast, they were uncompetitive.
Yeah.
5 minutes into that game, you thought, oh, gee, Sydney are in for a real fight here.
Yeah.
because they did look a bit tired. We talked about Sydney. Yeah. They'd beaten Carlton and St Kilda the two previous weeks and been a bit dour. They continued in that way. How, and Hawthorn was sharper.
How unbelievable was that from John Newcombe? Nine days ago or whatever, he was taken as pick two in a mid-season draft, and then he's playing in the middle of the ground.
Yeah. Six games ago, he's at Poo-Wong. Yeah.
Playing in the middle of the ground on an
AFL
match.
What does that say for the AFL?
So you can miss a few along the way.
Yeah. 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 Poo-Wong.
12 possessions, 14 tackles.
He was Bobby Boucher.
Yeah.
He was tackling fuel.
He was. He was tackling fuel.
He had more tackles than possessions on debut.
That's a good effort.
You see, we'll hopefully talk to Tom Mitchell if it's not this week, next week.
That's if he's not getting tackled by John Newcombe.
He was a contested possession.
He was
machine.
The animal that we remember him as at Sydney and at times at Hawthorn, not getting the cheap ball sort of round the back and all that sort of stuff. But I'll just be interested to know whether he's been spoken to about, you got to change your game, Tom. You got to get back to what you were, because that was, he was a completely different player than what we've seen in recent
times. And Segler was also.
Big Johnny Segler. Yeah. I mean, late for Ned Reeves. At 11 clearances, Big John.
Yep. 19 contested possessions he had. Maybe you should have picked him, Whitey.
The Hawks, when they play good footy half, and you go back through the years, is when they actually pinch a goal or two from out of their ruck. Yeah. And the one swapping forward. So they got one each from out of Big Boy, McAvoy and Segler. And you think about
both all, really good.
Yeah, you think about all the Hawthorn sides, whether it's Hale, McAvoy, Segler, you know, you've had a host of different ruckmen. They hit the scoreboard.
Yep.
And so they got that as well. I think the Swans are a bit flat. I thought they were a bit flat against the Saints. I thought they were treading water, and it was the Saints who just was beginner's night at the driving range. Just spraying them left and right. So they're right at the picking.
Well, they have an issue now.
They've got a real issue.
Yeah, the Saints. They're next.
The Swans.
The Swans. Their next three are Port Adelaide, West Coast, Western Bulldogs.
Oh, dear.
Well, going back to my form, my form ladder.
Don't try to be a part of this,
you've
mate.
You've got the Whitey board. Okay, he's got the form ladder.
Form ladder doesn't work, just by the way, as an announcement. The form ladder doesn't get involved in the bye rounds because it thinks it's a joke, just like I do. The whole bye round.
Form ladder is a joke.
We wait until the bye rounds
are
complete.
It's a joke of a form ladder.
And we move forward strongly.
Let's go back to Whitey's board.
Teams very rarely make the finals when they lose three games against teams that finish outside the eight. Sydney have already lost four.
Geez, he's got his yellow legal pad going on, doesn't he?
No.
The Whitey board's been hot.
You've just made that up.
Yeah, there's no data to back that up.
This is a gut feel thing.
You just made up a stat.
You made up a stat.
I'll go back on it.
Teams rarely. There's no evidence on that at all.
That's straight off the Whitey board.
You made that up.
You know what? I'm bringing an end to the Monday Footy Review because that is officially garbage. That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.